Hello and welcome to the Unlocked Basketball Podcast presented by Locked In Basketball. Today's guest is Kennedy Creamer, who is the Director of Coaching currently at Sunbury and the current Knox NBL 1 coach, as well as the former Tall Ferns. Kennedy also has WNBL experience, international experience, and a three-time Big V Championship with Sunbury as well as a four-time Coach of the Year award, three with Big V and one with Siebel. If there's any disturbance in the audio, we had a little bit of trouble at a couple stages with the internet connection. Obviously, we had to do it over Zoom, so if any bouncing or whatever, we do apologize in advance, and for the most part, it should be okay. Thank you. Hope you enjoy. Welcome, Kennedy, to the Unlocked Basketball Podcast. Kennedy is an elite women's basketball coach in Australia, having coached national levels in New Zealand at the national teams there, under 15s up to under 20s, as well as the WNBL and the national teams in Victoria, and Big V three-time champion, one of the seasons going undefeated. Is that?
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate the really warm, generous, countback of some of the programs I've been privileged to be a part of. But that sounds pretty accurate. And current, although there wasn't a season, current Knox NBL 1 coach for this year as well. But unfortunately, due to the pandemic, we find ourselves with no basketball. So, I guess it is just what it is. I think many of us have found ways to adapt in their own way. But no, it's been great. I really appreciate your bringing me on the show today.
No, thank you. How are you keeping in touch with basketball at the moment? You're running sessions, mass sessions on Sundays. How's that going?
Yeah, look, really good. I'm running free online training sessions for any VJBL kid, during this lockdown. And I guess the rationale and reason for me doing that was the last lockdown, I spent a lot of time online doing coaches clinics for coaches all around the world, and obviously part of Wyndham Basketball's coach presentations. I did a couple with them as well, and then did a whole lot with a lot of US-based coaches. So the last one, I guess I spent a lot of time on myself and spent a lot of time in the coaching community, and then the wheel started moving slowly. We all got back to work and, we thought, okay, well, here we go. Basketball's going to get back up again. Then obviously the second lockdown probably didn't come out of nowhere. It was probably to be expected, to be honest. But then I sort of thought, well, the people that are probably doing it the hardest this time around are probably the kids, particularly when the VJBL season was officially announced as being cancelled. So I thought, what a great opportunity. If I have the capacity to do so, why don't I try and, just reach out to some of the kids around Victoria and try and bring a bit of positivity to what they're doing at home and offer some skills. And look, I was doing it anyway for the Sunbury kids as my role as coaching director out there. And the club have been kind enough to boost the capacity of my Zoom session, so I'm able to have 500 people at meetings. So I thought, well, we've got 200. If we had every kid from Sunbury as a rep kid, we'd have 240 kids there, which technically gave us, 260 extra spaces. So why not offer them enough to the rest of the VJBL community? And for me, basketball's never been I've been fortunate enough to be given so much by a lot of great people at no cost. So, everything I know has been stolen and recycled from somebody else. So why not offer that information for free to kids who probably need it right about now? So that was the rationale behind it. I just want to be able to give back to the community in any way I can. And it's good for me too. Mentally I get to get out there and do something I enjoy doing. But to be honest, the lockdown for me, both lockdowns, you asked me about basketball. Basketball's probably been eclipsed in all honesty because I've just recently become a father.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. So my wife and I, Chelsea, who obviously plays and has played a lot and been a part of those three championship winning teams out at Sunbury there. We've had our firstborn child and a lovely little boy, and he's probably taking up more time than anything. So, I'm obviously still trying to stay engaged with basketball as much as I can. So there are plenty of conversations with plenty of coaches around. But yeah, to be honest, basketball's taken a bit of a backseat over the duration of these, 4 to 5 months.
Going back to the coaching pathway, you started with high school basketball. Is it over in New Zealand, right?
Yeah, that's right. So I've been living in Australia for 10 years and everything prior to that has been based in Christchurch, New Zealand.
So going from, you've made leaps and bounds from high school level up to national level with what seems a relative, I'm sure it wasn't so quick throughout the time, but
relatively quick time span. How did you make the progression so smooth, or it was there ups and downs and ebbs and flows as we're going through one right now?
The one fortunate thing for me with basketball was, I mean, I started in high school, so obviously I had a playing background before I got into coaching. But I was fortunate enough as a player, and, you know, I think, you know, New Zealand has a lot of really underrated coaches, and I was probably fortunate enough to have some of the best to ever coach the game of basketball. Christchurch, where I'm from, New Zealand, is a huge basketball city. Every year, our representative team. So it's the equivalent of playing state. If you make a rep team, you represent your city, you go to national. So it's similar to an Australian Junior Championships. Okay. So I was fortunate enough to play in a lot of those representative teams and also coach. But my coaches were NBL, former Tall Blacks, former Tall Ferns coaches, you know, played with a lot of great players. And, you know, so really my interest in basketball was always with the technical and tactical side of it. I was just a reasonable athlete and a reasonable player. I wasn't a world beater by any means. And, you know, but I always enjoyed listening to coaches talk about strategy and offense and defense and, you know, just how the moving parts sort of worked. So for me, there was always an interest, but it actually started for me as an under-12s coach. So I started coaching boys. Right. So a lot of the boys that I was involved with through that age group are now playing NBL in New Zealand. There's one, Ethan Rusbach, who plays for the Tall Blacks. So I came through with a really talented group of young guys who are now all coaches or you know, friends like NBL players back in New Zealand. Obviously, with New Zealand having their current NBL season, I'm seeing a lot of those guys getting some opportunity now. So for me, that's where it started. And, you know, it certainly definitely wasn't easy. You know, I got, goodness, back then it would have been 800,000 people when I was sort of coming up. You know, so I started coaching high school. So I was working at Christchurch Girls High School, coaching after-school basketball programs. I was coaching pretty much everything I could coach. After-school programs, high school programs. I was working at Aranui High School and Christchurch Girls High School. So I was working within two school programs. I was a sports coordinator at Aranui High School at the time, and I was going through university, going through my bachelor's sport coaching through the Christchurch College of Education. So I was pretty much just getting my hands, you know, wherever I could with coaching. So the volume I was coaching at was ridiculous. And I actually remember one season I was coaching at 17 teams. And the crazy part was, I mean, didn't even have a license back then. I was legitimately walking and busing everywhere because the metro system in New Zealand is pretty easy to get from A to B. And I guess from there, you know, coupled with working with some former Tall Blacks and Tall Ferns coaches, you know, some opportunities arose from me. I worked with some junior teams through under 12s all the way through to under 21s in New Zealand and, you know, managed to be a part of some really, really talented teams. And, you know, I guess the door opened up for me when Christchurch got the license for a WNBL team. So we actually had a WNBL team in Christchurch called the Christchurch Sirens from 2007 to 2008. And probably from there, that's really where the door started opening up. So being a part of that program as an assistant coach then opened up the door of the Tall Ferns program. But obviously, you know, I mean, I was doing New Zealand junior stuff part of that, but then obviously opened up the door to the Tall Ferns who were then prepping for a 2008 Olympics after having a pretty good Athens series under Tom Ma and Mike McHugh. And then I guess from that point onwards, I obviously stayed as an assistant coach for 3 years with the Tall Ferns program, then ended up taking over as head coach in an interim basis. Obviously, I could go through a lot more detail, but, you know, I guess in a very quick synopsis, that's probably the story from where I started all the way to where I currently am now.
And one of them big accolades there, we overcame Spain for a big game in 2017, was it? From the top,
it was 2016 or 15. To be honest, I certainly remember the game, but it was yesterday. I just can't remember.
It all becomes a blur.
I'm pretty sure it was 2016. I think it was 2015. It was 15 or 16. It was certainly in the build up for the you know, a potential Rio qualifiers. But certainly, I mean, that was a big deal for us. And certainly it came at a, you know, a really good time. Maybe we peaked a little bit early because we went away to the Olympic qualifying event and played great basketball against the French women's team who just came off, you know, they obviously won a silver medal at the last Olympics. So we were silver or bronze, sorry. So, I mean, we were definitely, we had a pretty tough draw card playing France. And then obviously, you know, losing that game just sort of took the wind out of ourselves, and we had to play a really upbeat Cuba the next day, which was really tough. So, but yeah, goodness, that certainly working with the New Zealand Tall Ferns program, you know, I was fortunate enough as an assistant coach and head coach to travel so many different parts of the world and meet some great people from different countries and work with a lot of great coaches. But, you know, more importantly, I guess, build some great relationships with some wonderful women and young ladies who I, you know, still have communication with to this day, you know, even though I sit away from the program.
You mentioned that you did your sport coaching degree. Like myself, actually, I finished only recently. Did that help project your career or help it at any point or not so much?
To be honest, it's probably evolved a lot from where it was when I did it. I mean, and look, certainly there's no doubt a lot of the learnings from that have helped me. But I do remember having a very vivid conversation with one of the deans at the time. And, you know, because like most students, we all go through some form of hardship, whether that be normally financial, you know, normally eating noodle box and fish and chips and all those sort of low cost meals and not looking after ourselves. But I do remember at one stage, a job opportunity was offered to me very early into that degree. And, you know, I actually chose to go on and take that job opportunity. But I do remember the dean telling me that I wouldn't go on anywhere without that degree. So, you know, again, I'm not the best, certainly not a marketing project for them, because I obviously went on to do a lot of things, you know, very much against their advice. So, but look, there's absolutely no doubt. I mean, I still refer back to the biomechanics I did, the environmental physiology, exercise prescription. I mean, we covered absolutely everything, sports psychology, sociology. I mean, it all certainly helps. And, you know, I mean, the thing is probably the further I went up in basketball, the higher levels I, you know, was fortunate enough to be a part of, the more applicable that stuff was. When coaching juniors and young teams, I found it really difficult to try and relate that information to them. And, you know, so look, absolutely, there's no doubt that the lessons I learned from those, you know, those lectures. And
as much as the kids want to learn about the biomechanics structures and all the muscle movements and the interplay of everything and the energy system in play, they go, all right, what are we doing next? You got a bit. It's not really applying until you're the elite level. Yeah, some application might apply to it. Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, the battles we're sometimes challenged with juniors is we've got to teach them to catch a ball first or use the length to get the pressure. And so we're not really going to be teaching them at the ATP systems or, you know, and absolutely that information is certainly relevant. You know, but, you know, I guess as a coach, sometimes you've got to pick your battles and know which ones are more important to cover.
Absolutely. Having coached extensively in both countries, how do you find the basketball in comparison in Australia to compare to New Zealand?
Well, that's a really good question. I mean, well, first of all, I guess the reason why I came to Australia was, you know, there was no opportunities for me within New Zealand to you know, continue to move forward in my chosen field, which was coaching women's basketball. And, you know, obviously I wanted an opportunity to coach at the highest level I possibly could. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier on, New Zealand used to have a WNBL women's team, and due to funding and all sorts of things, you know, unfortunately it wasn't able to continue on. So, you know, I was just lucky enough at the time I was assisting Lee Gooding, who, you know, was as the, certainly still the manager of the National Wheelchair Basketball Program here in Australia. So he had a obviously a strong connection with Aubrey Wodonga, who had a Siebel women's team at the time. And that was my connection to that program. And they just come off a pretty rough season in 2008. And the job was obviously advertised. So that's what I applied for, and I got that job. So I ended up in Albury. But prior to then, obviously, yeah, I've had some experience coaching against Australian teams, getting my absolute backside kicked by Victoria by, you know, 60, 80, 90 points. It probably happened before on New South Wales Metro. So certainly basketball from a New Zealand standpoint, watching basketball in Australia, it's certainly always been the envy of Asia, and certainly have been the, you know, Australians have always generally set the benchmark for the rest of us around the rest of Asia Oceania. So for me, there was always this huge attraction coming over here. And I guess in terms of structures, New Zealand's very different in the sense that we get our volume of basketball. We play tournaments and we have very small build-ups and preparations in our junior basketball from a national playing standpoint, if you represent your city. So, it's very different. Whereas, you know, in Australia, obviously we play league. It's league basketball, playing a VJBL. You might play, you know, 30, 40 games in, you know, a year. You had some tournaments and practice matches. And whereas in New Zealand, you might have, you know, 6 to maybe 10 week build up, and then you'll play one or two tournaments and that's it. And you maybe you play 10 games if you're lucky. So, you know, in New Zealand, we're really used to having our basketball in really small volumes, and then you're going to have a large break. And then maybe you play some club basketball and some school basketball, which would be a Friday night commitment, similar to VJBL if you're playing school. Then maybe you play club ball, which might be a Saturday or a Sunday, or both, depending on how good you are. You know, I think the coaches back home are just as good as any of the best coaches here. You know, the difference is if you're a women's coach in New Zealand, well, there is a league to coach them, but again, you might only coach 10 games a year. So I think coaches here have that luxury of large volumes, a lot of leagues, huge pre-seasons. Being able to coach juniors, there's so much more accessibility to, you know, the players, no matter where you're based in Australia. So, and certainly from my standpoint, it was just, for me, the smart move from a career choice to come over here and try and be a full-time basketball coach. So, you know, again, just really, really fortunate and always really grateful for the opportunities I've had to, you know, while I've been here. And obviously for me, it's been more than basketball because I've met my wife and started a family and all sorts here. So very, very fortunate.
Right, right. And why, you mentioned you trialed a little bit with boys basketball. Why so much with women's basketball? Is there an attraction to it, or a kind of, what sort of part of the game or attracts you to women's basketball more so?
To be honest, it wasn't necessarily a choice. It was just the path that was presented to me, you know, when I started. I mean, basketball players are basketball players, and I wouldn't change the way I coach. Yeah, maybe in not every case, maybe physically a male can do some things, perhaps, you know, the average female can't. You know, obviously dunking, and so there's different parts of the game if you coach in men's basketball. For me, it wasn't necessarily a choice. It was just the path I was presented with, and, you know, from there, I guess I enjoyed working, you know, in that field. And but I mean, I'd be just as happy to coach men's basketball, boys basketball. It doesn't bother me one way or another. But you know, I guess because I've coached so much women's basketball, people will just assume, oh, you know, he's a women's coach. So to be honest, I don't see too many differences at all. I mean, basketball players are basketball players. I wouldn't treat them any differently one way or another.
100%. Also, moving on to a bit of like culture or setting, team culture. Been running the club at Sunbury as well, been major influence over there. What's your core values of setting the culture on a large scale, broad term for a whole club? We'll start with that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really broad question. I don't know if anyone ever gets the chance. I know I reference this book a whole lot on a lot of my coaching clinics. Is there's a great book by a man by the name of Jeff Jensen. He writes a book called How to Create a Championship Winning Culture. Easily one of the best books I've ever read. And, you know, a lot of the stuff that he wrote really resonated with me in a number of ways and a number of programs I've been involved with. But I guess the toughest thing to do when you first come into any program, whether that be a WNBL, NBL One, you know, association level, is try and get a gauge of where the culture currently sits. And, you know, often that's done by meeting with other coaches and getting a feel for them and meeting with different members and getting their perspective on things, and obviously watching, you know, different games of basketball and watching juniors and watching people operate and seeing how they go about their everyday sort of business. So, you know, there was nothing wrong with the culture that was currently there. Obviously, it was just a chance to enhance it. But for me, I guess if we're talking building blocks of culture, I guess the first and most important one for me, where it starts and stops, is just your ability to have good relationships with people, your players and your coaches. And that was the first thing I guess I needed to do, was establish a relationship with every coach and sit down with them and give it time and get their assessments and get their thoughts and their feelings of where they thought the program was and where they'd like it to be, you know. So that took some time. And I mean, certainly,
absolutely,
I don't believe that anyone's ever going, particularly coaching director role, you know, your results are really going to come sort of maybe three, four, 5 years down the track. I guess anyone that any board that has an expectation of someone coming in and having instant success is probably a bit of a pipe dream, because there is a lot to, you know, you want to establish your style of play, you want to establish routines and traditions and start building those sorts of things, and they take time. But you know, for me, I guess the major building block is having good relationships with your players and with your personnel and your coaches. So that was probably the first thing that comes to mind when I think about culture. But you know, I guess the other part is, you know, establishing standards and expectations, and you know, that meant sometimes probably philosophically what I believed it should look like and smell like and taste like is very different from perhaps somebody else's perspective. And, you know, I guess, you know, my view's always coming from the highest level possible. And if I was to coach an under 12s team, I'd coach them the same as I'd coach an international team. Obviously, you know, the expectation might drop a little, but I'm certainly not going to change the way I do things just because obviously I'm not going to get the player. There are obviously some huge no-no. Some things as a coach you just don't do. You don't cross the line in those areas. You know, why not try and teach young players, if they're ready for it, the same skills that you're teaching, you know, a senior player as an example. So establishing standards and expectations, and they might just be things such as your time management, you know, what time you arrive and what you wear and how you wear it. You know, are we dressed appropriately for training? Are we arriving on time and are we ready? Are we foam rolling? Are we bring professionals that doing all the small 1% things before we take the floor? And is our mindset right? You know, so we're talking about those sorts of things and how we train, you know, do we a high amount of focus or we're completely unfocused. So there are a lot of things we just wanted to establish. And a lot of those building blocks were already there. You know, I think some coaches prior to, you know, me being there had done an exceptional job with that program. And obviously a lot of that shape was there and maybe just some of the areas needed to be sanded slightly and smoothed out some. And, you know, again, I didn't do that on my own. I had a tribe of coaches and volunteers and people that helped get that to where it is. And you know, if you ask me now, I'm still not happy with where we're at. I think we can be better and, you know, we're going to continue to work on building that culture of that program. And, you know, it's tough because Melbourne, for example, is, I tell the state kids this every year when they come and try out, it's like, hey, you might have missed out on the state team, but you don't understand how lucky you are living in this state. You have got access to some of the best in the world. You know, if you can make it as a basketball coach in this state, you know, I think you're as good as anyone in the rest of the world basketball wise. So, you know, kids are extremely lucky. There's some great coaching directors around, and I don't want to name them because I'll, you know, I'm so scared that I'll forget someone and something. You know, the clubs are just saturated with an amazing level of talent. So I think we're all incredibly lucky here.
Absolutely. Get a new national team or whatever. What's your first protocol once getting the team? Obviously, as you said, the building blocks already done from previous coaches or so on, let's say a Vic Metro team, for instance, and then you come into play and you get given or you choose this team. What's your first steps or protocol of like, all right, this is what we're setting. This is what we have. Of course, Bus Victoria already have their obviously structure. What do you add to it?
Yeah, it's a good question again, probably wouldn't prioritize too many things over another in a basketball program, but a large amount of that is that tryout process. Once again, you know, generally that's where it starts, you know, for a Vic Metro team, you know, we'd normally start at ECC. So we have a couple of training sessions, and I guess it's really important from the moment these players walk through the door that, you know, we have a really professional, united approach and our standards and expectations are extremely high and our communication is very clear and concise to these young ladies who are walking through the door for the first time for many of them and have never experienced, you know, that playing for a state team. So, you know, again, if I reflect on last year at Nationals with the under 16 team, we treated it, our preparation was no different to, well, it was very different in many respects to a national program with New Zealand. I might get 3 or 4 days with the team, you know, before we have to go and compete at a world event. With the state team last year, we had 30 training sessions. So we had excellent preparation, you know, certainly from my standpoint, I wasn't willing to compromise, no different to, you know, what I said before with the Sunbury or coaching director role is that I'm going to coach it to the absolute best of my ability. And, it, you know, I understand I'm not coaching world-level athletes yet, but there's no reason why we can't create a world-class program for junior players, no matter what level we coach at. So, you know, that's going to be my mentality with everything. For me, what was really important is them seeing a professional united coaching staff that were on the same page. So maybe 101 would be meeting with the coaches and making sure that they have a really clear understanding of my expectations, their roles, clearly defined. Everyone knows what role they play within a training session. Everything's clearly planned out. But, you know, you have to be really methodical and meticulous with things. So, look, maybe that would be the first thing I would probably say would be number one for me.
And getting back to the coaching side, the coaching a seasoned team such as your Sunbury Big V team, or how does it compare coaching a national team? Obviously, you've got much shorter time span with the national team. What's the major differences between that you find? Is it easier or harder, or is it, what are the obstacles?
And I guess the difference really for any coaches who are listening, it's tournament play versus league coaching. The beauty of coaching in a league, you know, and if I use Sunbury as an example, is you have a whole week to prepare, you know, specifically for the personnel of another team, or, you know, their offense or defensive strategy. You have plenty of time to implement those things, and you have time to perhaps work on the things that you didn't do so well a week before and then make adjustments in that space, and then obviously prep for what's ahead of you. In tournament play, the turnaround's much quicker. You know, you might go from playing one game one night and you play Spain, who are really up-tempo, excellent in the half court, great at the pick and roll, excellent at playing ISO ball, excellent breaking it down and forcing the rotation and finding the extra pass and, you know, knocking down shots. And then you might play a team like Cuba the next day who are just going to absolutely beat the living crap out of you.
Yep.
And, you know, play you really physically. And, you know, so it's really difficult having a, you know, first of all, being able to scout in advance is so important at that level. And you've got to be able to find, you got to be really resourceful as a coach and try and find as much game tape and get as much intel as you possibly can on teams in advance. And then, you know, you might be scouting live before or after your game and then prepping all night and maybe having very little sleep. I mean, certainly it's so important as a coach to get sleep when you're on the road, you know, but, you know, generally speaking, they're pretty sleepless nights. And, you know, any coach that's coached international basketball would understand what I'm talking about. And for those coaches who are aspiring to coach at that level, you know, you hopefully one day you get the opportunity to, you know, get an understanding of sleep deprivation. For any parent here, you already know that anyway.
You will
experience that anyway. Those are probably two of the biggest differences, just the amount of time and the turnaround time and how quickly you have to make adjustments as a coach from tournament play versus league play, you know. And look, you know, again, for any junior coach in the VJBL space, you're generally not coaching double headers, but anyone coaching league basketball, you get a feel for that, so you'd have some understanding. Yep. But as a coach, I guess it really forces you to prioritise what's important. And I guess, you know, lucky for me, later in my coaching career, I had some really unbelievable assistant coaches, you know, from Australia here who worked with me in the program. Dean Kinsman, Chris Lucas, and Guy Malloy were all part of my program at some stage. And, you know, I think Guy was excellent with just, you know, philosophically for him, it was, you know, put a lot of focus in on your team and the way you do things. And, you know, but it takes away from a lot of the scout, you know, if you have, well, this is how we specifically defend this action every time. These are our rules. You know, you can always refer back to, well, these are our rules. And this is change, you know, we do that flare string, that mid pick and roll. Hey, we just go to our rules in that situation. And, you know, you can make adjustments if you need to, but, absolutely. No, I just thought he was great with forcing me to simplify a lot of things. And I guess, you know, for those coaches, I didn't really see them as assistants. They really were on board as mentors, because that's, you know, mentors almost co-coaches, because that's the way I valued their experience so much, that that's what they offered to the team, to the program, in that sense. So it's certainly for any coaches that want to get involved at that level, there's a lot of, I guess, basketball is basketball at the end of the day. You know, you're working to try and limit an opposition team to doing what they do best and force them into something they don't want to do, whether you're in specifics of you know, strategies. I mean, last podcast I listened to, when Sam was on board, is forcing teams to shoot, you know, contested mid-range jump shots. I mean, that's where the game is going defensively. And unless, of course, they have Michael Jordan and you're trying to push and keep them away from the mid-range of the floor and keep them going left, for example, or whatever. But I can't remember the exact Detroit Jordan rule strategies were off the top of my head, but I mean, we've all watched, obviously, The Last Dance during the last lockdown. So for many people, that'd be fresh in their minds.
Absolutely. I think it was running corners and pushing back, running corners pretty much limit the floor.
Yeah.
So moving on to communication, how does your on-court, say, communication versus your off-court communication with the players translate? So at trainings and then after trainings and after and before games, how do you build that open lines of communication?
Yeah, no, it's a really good question. And again, you know, basketball is one of those things where us coaches overcomplicate so many things that a simple subject can become such a broad one. But look, for me, my communication generally doesn't change. Again, players will have a really clear understanding of the expectations and standards that we're trying to set. And obviously, as a group, we're going to have some goals in place. So we'll know the boundaries very early. Pre-game, I'm pretty cool, calm, and relaxed. And, yep. And the reason being is, well, you know, at the end of the week, you've done all your preparation, it's game time, and basketball's a player's game. That's their time to go out there and implement whatever strategy or game plan you may have constructed together as a group. So I'm generally not into the rah-rah pre-game NFL any given Sunday. You're not going to get one of those from me. Every now and then I want to bring one out, but it's simply not my style. I certainly believe in implementing a very consistent game plan throughout the week so that when we go into the game, there's as little uncertainty and as little anxiety as possible. We're all very clear on what the task may be. And the reason why I went away from that was a very young coach here. He used to love giving those sort of spiels and maybe it's for another time, but I remember that when you're sort of getting taken out of my sail with one of those speeches once. But the communication doesn't change from training. You know, again, I really try to challenge the playing groups I work with to that they should generate the energy and the communication training. I think as a coach, you know, the less I'm heard, probably the better, and certainly for myself. But I certainly like to talk, and I certainly like to, you know, be very honest with what I'm seeing, and I'm very honest in my observations, and, you know, that doesn't necessarily work for everybody. So as a coach, I guess you have to understand which players you can communicate to clearly and constructively, you know, in an open forum. And some players, you know, you often need to pull them aside and put an arm on the shoulder and speak to them, you know, away from the group. So some people can respond in many different ways, and we've all coached players that respond differently. So I guess as a coach, you really have to understand your personnel as to, and that will change the way you know, sometimes you approach different situations. For me, often if it's a very general observation that, you know, perhaps no one on the team can, I don't know, catch a ball, for example, or then perhaps you have some stern words with the whole group in game. Again, I'll be talking just as much as anybody else. Sometimes I'm going to look like I've played the game because I've sweat that much. And anyone who's ever know you're in the air, if you've been unfortunate enough to see me on a TV game or even seeing you get the sweat up, particularly when I start getting frustrated. So, again, I think for athletes, they, you know, or basketball players, and, you know, always they're people first, and people want to be treated with respect and communicated. And, you know, have I failed at that sometimes? Absolutely, I have. I'm a human being, and that's something that I'm striving to be better at. But they want, everyone wants to be told the truth, not beat around the bush. Sometimes in close quarters in games, we don't have that time to take the long road to an explanation that's going to make everyone feel good where we hug dolphins and believe that, you know, we don't get to that point. Sometimes we have to take the straight line, the hard line, and, you know, and that doesn't necessarily always work well for everybody, but under pressure, often, you know, we sometimes have to revert to that strategy. Not always the best one, but certainly, you know, I've had some coaches that have just told me how it is and called a spade. And certainly, I think, particularly at the elite levels with senior players, they appreciate that more than the, I don't know, and, you know, no one wants you to beat around the bush at that level. Mm. I mean, but again, different courses.
Absolutely. Yeah. So how do you build in that relationship with players though? How do you connect with the players? Do you do much stuff outside of trainings and games and so on? And obviously with tournament scenarios, you have less opportunity. But with your home and away seasons, what do you do outside of the basketball court to help encourage you?
Well, look, that's a great one too. And certainly part of building a great culture is having credible leaders, having people within your framework that are a support network for players. So, you know, having a leadership group is a great way, and perhaps passing that responsibility on to players. For me, as much as possible, I love to have, you know, the players have as much ownership and then obviously as much accountability as possible. So, you know, you're trying to create a culture where perhaps you have someone within your group or a leader that does events with the team outside of basketball. And certainly at that level, the last thing you're going to be doing is you go away in a tournament, and sometimes we've been living in each other's pockets for up to a month. And the last thing they need is to see me every day and hear my voice every day. So, you know, I really made it a habit when we went away with New Zealand team to have a complete day off, no basketball, and let them go away and be adults for a day. You know, sometimes I can give them 2 days. It just really depends on things. And they do their own thing. They have their own space. They have their own time. More times than not, the team got together and did things as a group, or we did team events. We went on team walks in the mornings, or, you know, maybe as a team we went out for dinner. So I try not to be involved in too much of that decision-making as possible, just because I do enough of that for the team with, you know, trainings and schedules, and they have a much better understanding of what they want to do than I do. I guess one thing is, you know, and a really simple one for coaches is, you know, I try not to talk about basketball. If we're at the dinner table, the breakfast table, sit down with different athletes and ask them, hey, how's everything at home? How are the kids? How's the husband? How's family life? What's going on? And you've got to be able to connect with your players on more than just a basketball level, for sure. So that was extremely important. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, do we go out and have team dinners? Yeah, I obviously love to go out and see them outside of basketball. And, you know, often you learn a whole lot about players away from the court. And often you learn more about them away from the court and get a really good perspective on who they are as a person away from.
Quite a lot. You get a personality or a perspective of a player on the court or at trainings or whatever, but when you get them off or in their own personal time, they're a completely different person, because you created this kind of personality in your head of what this player is, and then when you actually meet them or talk to them or get to know them a little bit, it changes your perspective so much on it.
And look, 100% agree. Last year I selected the coaching staff and I selected a young lady for the Vic Metro team as an example, and honestly, I was like, yeah, we've got an introvert here that's going to read books in spare time and maybe meditate and be in bed by 6 p.m. every night. And the complete opposite, like real extrovert, life of the party, you know, just great with the group and really mixed in with everybody. And for me, I was like, wow, I would never have picked that, you know, because this kid's incredibly talented, but, you know, on the court, I couldn't get it. We got there in the end, but just getting her to communicate with the teammates and explain, try to quarterback the team in different situations was a bit of a challenge. But obviously, once we got to the business end of, you know, going away to Australia Junior Champs in Northern Territory, she was like the complete opposite. So often players can surprise you outside of the basketball court, which that was a pleasant surprise, obviously, in that situation. It was great.
So, yeah, taking the time to get to know your players is crucial. Also, how do you stay ahead in a, once again, broad term of how do you stay ahead of the game, from reading to researching? Kind of how do you research and what do you research, essentially, if you research at all?
Yeah, I mean, and great one. I mean, for coaches out there, there's a lot of stuff online, you know, and there's probably too much. You know, I think everything that's online is really relative to, you know, potentially the level you're coaching at. And, you know, as a coach, you have to be able to decipher what's most important and what's worth, you know, passing on, what information is worth passing on to your kids. And then some of it, perhaps you put it aside for another time when it becomes more relevant. But for me, certainly online, a lot of online resources, you know, believe it or not, social media is a great resource for coaches, because there are a lot of coaches out there willing to share their thoughts and their expertise at no cost. YouTube has thousands and thousands and millions of hours of footage on there that's worth looking at. And FIBA do a great job of punching out a lot of international coaching stuff. Websites, I mean, for me, Google's great. I mean, you know, again, but it's just worth making sure you read all your content before you know, decide to use it. And obviously there are a lot of online coaching clinics. For me, I think a really important one, especially during times like this, and this is why the podcast space and online clinics is great, is I think coaches really, for those of us who perhaps are, let's say, technically inclined to, is probably the politest way, this would be a real challenge for some coaches who don't know how to use Zooms and don't know how to present coaching clinics online. So I think that, you know, for every coach, because we're giving video feedback, it's so powerful. I believe as a coach to sort of get ahead of the game is understanding technology as best as you possibly can and finding different programs and softwares, again, that keep you ahead of of the rest of the field. So for me, that's generally, I spend a lot of time online researching different products, different softwares, and obviously watching a lot of online basketball. To be honest, I wish I read a lot more. I mean, I haven't read enough. That's probably the way I could put it. I certainly need to read more, and I need to challenge myself to read more. But for me, there's nothing better than getting, and obviously we'll do that right now, but getting a group of coaches together and just talking X's and O's online and diagramming things and talking our way through problems and talking our way through situations and seeing what different people can bring to the table. That for me is the best learning you possibly can have, is basically being put in the deep end and figuring things out for yourself and learning how to adapt.
Yeah, with a limited situation, it still brings out the tendencies of, say, a game or training, having to adapt on the fly or thrown into a deep end or anticipate something that you didn't expect, which is a great way of keeping people toes in the water sort of thing. That's about everything I had for you today, Kennedy. Is there anything else you'd like to add in or anything I've missed or any crucial information?
No, I can't. I mean, obviously I could probably talk about the specifics of the coaching pathway all the way through, but no, look, I mean,
I have to do a part two for that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to catch up and do a part two at some stage and talk through the C-ball all the way to WNBL, to the national and back to the national team that you can catch. But no, it's been great. I appreciate your time. I appreciate what you're doing too. So thank you very much for having me. And look, hopefully there's some content on there that's going to be applicable to some coaches that hopefully get something out of it.
Absolutely. We'd like to thank you very much for sharing your knowledge or a very small portion of everything you've got banked up there. Thank you for the continued support to the community as well, which is every time I jump on Facebook, there's something you've shared or added or whatever. So anyone definitely out there listening that wants more advice, go find Kennedy on Facebook, because there's tons out there that I think you're sharing and webinars and so on. Thank you once again for coming onto the podcast, and thanks for your time, Kennedy.
Thanks, Alex. Appreciate it, mate. Take care.
Thank you again for listening to the Unlocked Basketball podcast presented by Locked In Basketball with our guest today, Kennedy Creamer. Hope you guys enjoyed listening to the conversation and got something from it, which is fantastic. We'd love to hear your feedback on the socials, Facebook, Instagram, or email, all at Locked In Basketball, to get the latest feed for the podcast and what's coming and the next guest. Make sure to tune in next week for the next guest being released on Tuesday. See you then, guys.